Hello and welcome to The Wound Doctors, a podcast series dedicated to the study and improved treatment of wounds. These episodes are brought to you by Convatec, pioneering trusted medical solutions to improve the lives they touch. Rod Murray's my name, and on this episode, we're going to talk about an issue that goes to the very heart of wound care, the people who are at the front line. With me, as always, because I know almost nothing about wounds and the podcast kind of needs somebody who does know something about wounds, is Dr. Francis Henshaw. Dr. Fran, we've got a guest with us today. Would you like to tell the listeners who that person is and how they might help us fulfill our goal of educating on the improved treatment of wounds?
Hi, Rod. Well, today we were going to have two people that know lots about wounds. So we've got Anne Fowler. Anne is a clinical nurse consultant and she works across four hospitals in the mid-north coast of New South Wales. So she has a huge remit and probably gets a huge amount of wounds put under her nose. So welcome, Anne.
Hello. Yes.
It's lovely to have you here and thank you for agreeing to come on to the Wound Doctors and highlight this issue that we've really been talking about quite a lot recently, and that is about pathways of care and how people can access the best care at the best time, because this isn't always happening at the moment, is it?
No, Fran, it isn't. And as you know, I work in the acute hospital system, but my background is that of primary health care as well. And I think that's given me over the years a broad look at the scope of the problem. We work in silos of care, and we all do a fantastic job with the knowledge that we individually have. But what's often missing is that cohesive team approach and putting in all of our clinical skills and knowledge, which differs, you know, from medical to podiatrist to nursing, etc.
Now, I believe I read a statistic somewhere, and it could be wrong because the old memory's not what it used to be, but I think that when people get a wound, between 70 and 80% of them go and see their GP, and the GP looks after the wound. And this is because when you get sick, you traditionally go to a GP. But what we also know is that GPs have an enormous remit of tasks and jobs and things that they have to do. And
overwhelming, in fact, you would say, your friend, things they're supposed to know.
It's incredible when you look at what a GP is expected to know about these days, that most of them, unsurprisingly, are not wound experts. So what, you know, it's a bit of a flawed system, isn't it, Anne, when somebody who sees so many wounds is perhaps not a wound expert? Is this your experience? And if it is, what can we do about
it? Yeah, sadly, that's true. And where it's hard, I mean, if you go back to the bones of it, you know, wound management is a specialty that's grown sort of exponentially over the last 20 years, but it's still not recognized really amongst medicos as a specialty. You know, I see that in GP practice as well as in inpatient. But in relation to the GP practice, you know, there isn't any incentive for them other than their genuine trying to do the best they can with what they have. And traditionally, they tend to, you know, see Mrs. Jones three times a week, perhaps, or send her to the community nurses to do dressing-focused care. And when they see Mrs. Jones in the practice, they're not getting the funding that is required to put their full wealth of their medical knowledge into finding a diagnosis with that patient. So what often happens is, you know, they'll give Mrs. Jones to the practice nurse who knows a bit about dressings or wound care. But the point is, if we don't put our two heads together and get an early diagnosis and preventive, you know, measures for those things getting worse, then you end up with that patient bouncing like a yo-yo, as Bill McGuinness often calls them, you know, between the acute system and then back to community nurses, back to the GP, and there isn't that medical management involved that's required.
Something that's become clear to me as we've done this podcast, Anne, is how little most of us outside of the medical world know about wounds or understand about how complex wounds actually are. Our experience is pretty straightforward. You cut your finger, you put a Band-Aid on, and it gets better. It's not that simple. Would it be fair to say that perhaps there's gaps in that knowledge within the medical industry as well about just how complex wounds can be?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. I mean, look, none of us, Rod, have all of the, you know, the knowledge, put it that way. And that's my whole point. And I work with a lot of doctors and they'll all put their hand up and say that, oh, I never knew. I had no idea. Postgraduate education for medicos, well, there's a lot more glamorous things than, you know, what they view as a nurse-orientated specialty. So that we're just not dragging them in at undergraduate or postgraduate level. Now, for GPs, as you said, Fran, you know, they're struggling with major, major things every day. And it's a business. It's a business model. So wounds are slow, very unsexy. And, you know, hey, they have a nurse that can do dressings. But as you said before, dressings are one vital part, but not all. And if we haven't got diagnosis and we haven't got the medical knowledge to look at things like, you know, doing investigative stuff, then the nurses struggle on their own. And there then becomes sometimes, please don't anyone shoot me for this, but we've all been guilty of it, myself included. It's a little bit of ownership on that patient with the wound because we care, because we want to see it through and we want to fix it. But we all, I think, need to recognize that we don't have all of the skills required. Mm. But put us all in the room together with the patient, then you might have a chance at giving them a quick, much earlier, good outcome.
Recognizing limitations and your own limitations, friend. We spoke to Ian Reid about this, didn't we? And it's a difficult thing to do. And it doesn't matter what industry you talk about. It's a difficult thing to do, is to recognize and admit your own limitations in your field.
Absolutely. And I think that I can give an example of this. I was talking to somebody in Tasmania, and they were talking about this wound that wouldn't heal, and they tried one of our products and nothing happened. And I asked a little bit more about this wound, and it was on a chap that was 40. And the first thing that I thought was, men who are 40 don't generally get wounds on their legs, you know, unless they've, I don't know, stood too near a motorbike exhaust and got a burn or something like that. It's not a usual thing. So automatically I'm kind of kicking into this mode of what else is going on here. And it turned out that when we looked at his medical history, he had quite a raft of autoimmune disease. And that suddenly gave a whole different perspective as to why he had a wound and why it wasn't healing. But, you know, I've only do these avenues of exploration probably because I've worked in a big tertiary hospital and an interdisciplinary clinic for nearly 20 years, where we do have these conversations with infectious diseases, renal, rheumatology, vascular, orthopedics, and we do have those people to call on. But I've been very privileged to be in that position, and in small places where they don't even have those specialists, you don't have that kind of knowledge. So it's a real conundrum as to how do we upskill these people, because one of the big issues I have in my current job is that my remit is to, you know, highlight the problem of wounds and give wound education to people. But
what do you do with the rest of your time, Fran? That would only take about 10 minutes a week.
Yeah.
How hard could it be?
I sit in a hammock, Rod, and I drink from pineapples. no, and so when we can plan these amazing education events, but it's very hard to get people to come along sometimes. I can't believe they don't want to listen to me.
I don't know that that's true, Fran. Those who know you would be front of the line. What do you reckon, Anne? Is Fran onto something there? What are some of the answers?
I mean,
problems is one thing, isn't it? Answers is what we really need. What are some of the answers, do you think, from what you see?
Well, I think, Rod, that we, and it's a very collective, big, worldwide we in the wound world, I think we have to start engaging doctors. We have to start showing them how much they're needed, and they are in this picture. You know, with the best intentions in the world, like a nurse-led clinic, they're not going to do things like biopsies. They haven't got the knowledge that, you know, a medical training gives you. Unless, you know, Fran, as you mentioned, you start automatically going down that trajectory of, oh, autoimmune, etc. Anyone who's had formalized wound training will do that. But if 80% of people that are looking after wounds at the coalface don't have that training, then that stuff's not happening. And this is where I think we need to start somehow. I don't know how we make wounds sexy. I don't know. But I think we have to start getting doctors to the party. You know, I do some private education workshops, and I focus very much on collaborative education and building networks. I engage the primary healthcare network. I engage with local specialists. I invite anyone and everyone. At each workshop, you might get two or three or five GPs. Very rarely, if ever, do you get specialists. And yet, in the acute system, these are the people making the decisions. And that concerns me. You know, at the Wounds Australia conference recently, there was less than 10% of that amazing turnout, and there was incredible numbers, but less than 10% were medical doctors. And that's what started this whole conversation. I thought, how do we do this? How do we engage them? And I think a possible solution, apart from offering the chocolate frog, you know, each time they turn up, they'll get an extra special chocolate frog. Or maybe we'll upgrade it to a bottle of, I don't know.
The chocolate frog economy is a fabulous idea, Anne, I think.
Yeah.
Start trying to get chocolate frogs. Well,
I think Bill McGuinness has got the monopoly on chocolate frogs. You have to come up with your own.
All right. Well, a bottle of Plonk, but, you know, my budget are probably only stretched to something nasty. But anyway, I just think that, you know, if we start engaging more at a local level, if you are a wound consultant or a wound specialist or a wound clinician, start building local networks so that people can be involved and you can start this discussion. You know, the elephant in the room is not in the room, pardon the pun, but where is the doctor in all of this? And we need to start engaging them and letting them know that they're vital. They're absolutely vital to the diagnostic and treatment process.
I think it's also important for them to understand what services are available and what the referral pathways are, because I know when I worked at the high-risk foot clinic at Royal North Shore, this was for limb-threatening wounds, and people would refer somebody who had a corn on the side of their toe, which could have just been seen by a private practitioner podiatrist. And the thing is, our initial appointments there are very long. So when you get a missed referral and you've put an hour and a half aside to see somebody who doesn't need to be seen, you've basically taken the bread off somebody else's table.
That's annoying enough in itself, Fran, but you would hope there wasn't much at the other end where people were being sent to you too late. Or is that another issue of, because it's a theme that's come up on the podcast many times, isn't it? The earlier somebody who knows what they're looking at can look at a wound and say, this one is going to be a problem. And I wonder, do we have enough people who know what they're looking at early enough to say, this is going to be a problem?
I would say absolutely not. And I think late referrals and late presentations, we know that they have worse outcomes. And we know that when people are seen more quickly, they get better outcomes. And we've actually done audits at Royal North Shore, and we've shown that often people end up going to emergency if they don't get seen in a timely manner. And, you know, resources are scarce. So I think that there are things that we can do to help to escalate people at the appropriate time. And it's not always that easy to determine if you're not an expert, because sometimes when something's big in size, people panic and send them to hospital. But often they might be a wound that's going to heal fine. And it's the small wound that's actually a little bit necrotic on somebody's toe that's going to cause them to lose their leg.
I agree totally, Fran. And I think that's where, you know, if we're looking at GP practice, getting them to take, if nurses see these patients before they go into the doctor for whatever reasons, get them to take their shoes and socks off on both feet. Have a look at their feet. Get the patient educated as well. Let's not forget the patient in this. But in education being the essence, as you said, to recognize referral pathways and refer early rather than later, but not to pass on without following up. So that often does happen. So people are referred down a pathway, but not brought back for that agent of connectivity, for want of a better word, you know. So the GP is often in a great position to do that. Now, you hit the nail on the head a minute ago where you said you could put an hour and a half aside to look after that patient. That isn't happening in GP practice. And again, that comes back to funding and time. And what happens is that patient gets seen by the practice nurse for the majority of that consultation, because it does take time to assess these patients. But there are ways we can make that work at a business level for GPs.
you're touching a nerve there with the funding system, Anne, and you're going to get France started if you're not aware about the
whole. But I think it is really important, because I was talking to a GP and they said, our practice nurses, we get them to look after our wounds, but they actually make more money for us when they're doing vaccinations. So, it's a flawed model, isn't it, when everything is paid by an amount of money and not for an outcome. And I think there will be changes in the medical system where there's going to be more kind of activity-based funding going forward. But I think what you're saying is people need to be invested into this network so that the patient doesn't just randomly bounce around. They actually have a journey and a pathway. So, Anne, if people come to your workshops, I'm quite intrigued now. How do you facilitate this? Let people have a little peek behind the curtain. What do you talk about?
Well, it can be a subject such as diabetic foot ulcers, the team approach and the management approach. And for that, I usually have vascular surgeons and podiatrists there as well. But we teach the attendees practical skills, because a lot of this knowledge is not translated into everyday practice by the people at the coalface, as you say, Rod. So I give them a lot of evidence that way, and we open discussions too. We have some very interesting heated discussions sometimes.
Can we come and record one of those, Anne? I suspect there'd be some gold amongst all of that, wouldn't there?
Oh, there would be. It'd be like, 60 minutes all over. but it is fun. And people, do kind of come away aware, if nothing else, of the local networks that they have and those pathways. And when you put a name to a face, it also breaks down some of those barriers. Nurses, we sometimes, I miss that gene, but sometimes we can be like a little bit shy and a little bit scared of ringing the GP or asking the GP or the specialist, could we do this? Could we do that? Most GPs are very open to that and like that communication because, as I said, it gets lost. The best thing, one of the best things I like about the collaborative education, I have had several practices come with their entire staff. Now, they get more than a chocolate frog, right?
Because a packet of Tim Tams for them.
that's the thing. They are actually doing a team approach as per the business. The other thing I often get is many practice nurses, God love them, will say, this is fantastic. We know this, we love it, but our practice, we have the doctor that won't do this. We can't get the products. We can't get the dressings. And there's a lot of misconception amongst GP practices about one, wound management being something that nurses do, and two, dressings are always expensive. They're not.
Do you do those in person, those courses, Anne, or is there a digital?
Absolutely, I do prefer face-to-face because I think we're humans and the humanistic factor sometimes got a little bit lost with COVID. We did well. We managed to do a lot of webinar stuff, but, there's nothing to replace the humanistic factor.
I think what you said about working collaboratively is really important. And I think communication is also really important because I know when I taught undergraduates, you get these students and they were really enthusiastic, but they'd write a letter to a GP basically telling them what they had to do. And it's like, no. You might give an overview of your findings and make some suggestions. And, holding a gun to a GP's head is not good when you're an undergraduate podiatrist. So I think that there is these nuanced approaches that can get you more successful results. And, when I was a jobbing podiatrist, you'd often have a person who needed some antibiotics. So you'd call the GP and you knew what the end game was. They were going to get this particular antibiotic and this particular dose, but there was often the dance of the seven veils to get there. So
the GP needs to come to that conclusion himself.
Exactly.
And give you the solution. That's interesting, Fran. Something Anne said before piqued my interest in relation to you having a corn referred to you.
Yeah.
This notion that you don't just refer somebody on, they then come back. Had that GP then had a feedback loop from you, I'm sure they would have understood that this wasn't particularly appreciated that they'd forwarded on this referral in that way. But how important is that and how much education happens there between somebody in your position at the specialist clinic, GP's referred something on that doesn't belong there? Isn't it important that they know that so that next time they don't refer along the same thing? You don't want to see that happen again and again, do you?
No. And, in that situation, you'd write back to a GP like you would with every referral and say, this wasn't an appropriate referral and we've suggested X, Y, and Z. But it is one of those things that the communications should have been in the forefront, and then you wouldn't have made the mistake in the first place. But I have to say that the hospital system is so convoluted, complex. There's so many cogs in that wheel, and there's such a high turnover of staff when you have people like registrars in hospitals who are only there for a short time. This is inevitably going to happen, and I think it's mitigating it rather than actually preventing it entirely.
And is the interest there, is the curiosity there, do you think, if it can be presented to people, the people we're talking about? I'm staggered and have been staggered from day one at the $3 billion figure that Fran quoted at me about what wounds cost the Australian health system. I couldn't believe that that was possible. Do you think there's a similar level? Ignorance is the wrong word, but is it possible to turn that amongst medical people where they are more interested in wounds, perhaps?
I think the key is the education, Rod. I think it has to start with undergraduate education. You know, I'm lucky I get to teach undergrad medical students as well. And you see them light up. They are interested. And I think if you can get them early, the same with, you know, perhaps GP trainees, if you can get them early and do that education, then they will understand the referral process a little bit better and their part in that role. Fran, you made me smile when you talk about, you know, in the hospital, the registrars and the JMOs. It's my worst nightmare every time we have a term change, because I have to start all over again. They are not aware of the knowledge that a skilled nurse or a skilled wound practitioner has. It's taken me a long time, but I've built a strong relationship with many of the specialists. And so I have to leapfrog the JMOs and the registrars and go straight to the seniors and say, I recommend we do this, this, and this. Obviously, the decision is yours, but this is where we would like to go. And, you know, I'd probably say these days in that role, 65 to 70% of them agree, but it is still a very hierarchical system.
Yeah, and I think that's it. You almost have to earn your stripes, don't you? And then they'll listen to you. But it's interesting what you say about, you know, getting people at undergraduate level. And I agree. And I think, you know, different universities have different curriculums and they have different amounts of learning around wounds. I think as woundies ourselves, we're never going to say that there's enough. But I guess there's a limit to what you can stuff into a curriculum when you're teaching someone to become a doctor in 5 years. So it is quite a challenge to get this base level of knowledge through to everybody. But I also think that there's a lot to be said for wounds, because I like wounds because there's something to look at. You know, you just get to, you can see it, can't you? Whereas, you know, other things that are going wrong inside people, oh, that's, to me, no interest.
Well, if you're a surgeon, friend, you get to open them up and have a look. Surely you'd like that.
I suppose.
No.
Do we take wounds seriously enough in medical education? And you first and then you, Fran.
No, absolutely not. And I think that's the crux of the problem.
This is how you get a generation of these issues, don't you, because you don't take it serious enough at the start.
Absolutely. It's still very much Florence Nightingale days, where it's like, oh, there's a wound in my office. Oh, there's a wound in my hospital bed. Nurse, can you please come and see to this? Mm. And that's where the crux of it is.
Fran, do you agree with that?
Yeah, look, obviously I'm biased. I'm a wound person, and I think that the world begins and ends with wounds. But it's funny, I've got a friend in high places who's like head of the Public Health Society, or it's probably something much more grand than that. And she was saying that she was having to talk at a very high level about the themes in public health. And I was like, well, have you got wounds on the list? And she was like, no, they're all interested in gambling and smoking and things like that. So it's not seen as a high priority in public health. And possibly because it's very much the consequences of it are not highlighted enough.
It doesn't often kill people, does it? A wound rarely kills somebody. It'll cost them a limb or really impact their life in a bad way, but you don't have that ultimate sort of penalty, do you? Like you do with smoking, and gambling can lead to those issues with, you know, when mental health issues. So, Anne.
Rod, I'd like to say something on that note that maybe it's just that I'm in the acute sector, but I would disagree with that.
Oh, good.
There are many people that die from mismanagement of wounds, whether that goes from the patient who has had a beautifully dressed malignant skin cancer for years and years and years, whether it's been dressed by a GP practice nurse or community nurses or aged care facilities, and then it becomes, you know, they've got secondaries. It kills them. And I've seen that many times. I've also more recently had a terrible case and a prime example. There was four or five medical teams looking after a patient with an atypical wound. I just think they're not diagnosed enough, but it was a significant atypical wound. It was a pyoderma. This woman was in hospital for many, many, many months with various teams of medicos and surgeons addressing her problems. She had multi-system problems. And each team was like, oh, and there's a wound. And I, for 6 months or more, was jumping up and down like a rabid leprechaun in a corner saying, this wound is the cause of all this other stuff. Please. We finally got a diagnosis of pyoderma, but then regionally we didn't have the inpatient access to a dermatologist or an immunologist or a rheumatologist. The treatment that this patient required was in the cities. Nobody would accept her because by that stage she was so unwell, and it wasn't a good outcome for that patient. Wow. And I'd like to say that was a one-off, but it isn't. So there are wounds, you know, all the statistics say there's something like atypicals are maybe 3%. I'd actually say there are a lot more than that. They're just not diagnosed. We need to be proactive with investigations earlier, and that's where we need our doctors on board to recognize.
Absolutely, because a lot of these tests that you might want to do can only be prescribed by a doctor, can't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or at least have their, you know, have their agreeance, like, you know, like dance the what did you call it? The dance of the seven veils. You know, I do that every day.
Yeah.
I'm saying, could we please do this investigation? For the most part, no, they will listen. But depends, as I said, if I get a new wave of registrars, I have to go, oh, dear God, there goes another veil. Now I have to high jump, you know. I wish it wasn't like that.
Jokes aside, though, interestingly, you've both achieved something here, have you not? In as much as whilst you might prefer a system that did this more easily, your friend in high places, Fran, whether they like it or not, now has wounds far closer to the top of their mind, yeah, if the opportunity presents. And as has Anne in her district, senior people there now know that when Anne rings, there's something worthwhile to listen to. And that is doing the job, what we'd like to see happen at the undergrad. But you're doing that job, are you not, sort of retrofitting? Anne?
Mind you, I have to just say there, one of the surgeons I work very closely with and have a great relationship once introduced me to some peers of hers saying, this is Anne. She has a master's in wound dressings.
Right.
To this day, I think she's still sort of not quite sure why there's a gash in her neck where it was almost decapitated.
But no doubt beautifully treated afterwards, Anne, after that had
happened. Absolutely.
Is there something to be said about that, Fran? Is there knowledge creep, and are we understanding more simply because advocates like yourself and Anne are actually doing the work?
Look, I think that incrementally wounds are being seen as more of a problem, but I think there's plenty more work that needs to be done to bring the crew together and make sure that the left hand talks to the right hand. And I think there's an immense piece of education that's needed. And I think that, you know, as we've said in a previous podcast, if you tipped all the money in the federal budget into health, you probably still wouldn't have enough to look after everybody the way that you wanted to, because it's just an exponential amount of money when there's so many new treatments and things like that around. And I think that what we need to be able to do is understand that it's always going to have its challenges with being underfunded. But if we can actually get people to employ the right resources at the right time, we should get better outcomes.
Better outcomes for people. That's what it's ultimately all about, isn't it? Better outcomes for people, for all the other things that we talk about. That is the end
goal. Absolutely, yeah. And I think if we each, in our own part, make a small change, because, you know, little things grow into bigger things. But, you know, if GPs for a small change could stop relying on just the nurse knowledge, and I don't mean just in any derogatory way, but if they could put their heads together when they have a wound patient rather than the GP relying on the nurse, if in the hospital system the specialists could consider that perhaps what they were taught 20 years ago is no longer the case.
Irrelevant, yeah.
You know, and involve those people, see wound management as a specialty, not a dressing specialty.
Where did it start for you, Anne? Why the interest in wounds for you? Was it just sort of by chance, or did you grow up as a five-year-old thinking, one day I'm going to work with wounds? I'm guaranteeing it's not the second, but...
No, as a five-year-old, I was going to be an air stewardess.
Right.
But I didn't grow tall enough, Rod. I'm only 5 foot, so they wouldn't have me.
Oh, bless.
which is probably a lucky thing. It started for me when I became a community nurse in the UK, and then I came out to Australia, and I always liked wounds. But when I was a community nurse, I thought, this is insane. We're just putting dressings on. Why, you know? And the more people I talked to, as in patients, I thought, there has to be a better way here. So I started being a bit of a groupie, to be honest, to Jeff Sussman and Carl. And one day he said to me, stop asking questions and study. And I said, all right, I will. And that's another thing I would really highly recommend anyone, nursing or medical, that has an interest, formalize that study, because then people will listen to you. You can provide evidence-based practice and you know, not just take little bits of this and that and run with it. You formalize your education. And mentor. For those people that are wound specialists, mentor.
Yeah, I think mentoring is really vital, because someone who's already trodden a path can really ease the pain for you in terms of learning, in terms of not going down rabbit holes, in terms of putting your knowledge into practice and just being a sounding board. So I think, you know, through my career, I've always had mentors, and I think it's important to know that often you can't come to the conclusion that you need by yourself. I think, you know, you can be the most experienced person, like Anne, you've got a wealth of experience and a master's, but I bet there's times that you have to phone a friend, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. You know, honestly, the patient example I gave, I was almost broken by that, as was the young nurse that works with me and I'm training. She's also studying. I questioned myself every day. What am I doing? What am I missing? Have I got this right? And unfortunately, the medical team's knowledge was not there either. They each went down their specialty rabbit hole, treating whatever symptom they could. And if it hadn't been for the mentors in the wound world, like, trust me, I had great people supporting myself and my colleague, not just in Australia, but in Europe. So I went into that wider wound room, if you like, asking for help. Am I missing something? What can I do next? What can I do better? You know, so it's always about, we don't all have the answers, nor the mental capacity sometimes to deal with what is hard.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes a fresh pair of eyes is really what you need. Yes. And when you're looking at these atypical wounds, all you need is someone who's seen it before, and they just, it's like pattern recognition, isn't it? And they can get it straight away. Whereas if you've not seen it before, you've really got very little chance of getting to the bottom of it. So very interesting discussion.
Very much. I love that idea that you both sort of mentioned about mentoring and whatnot. And until the system, you know, is fixed, as we discussed earlier, about the ultimate fix, about wounds being taken more seriously at the training level, that passion, that fire in your belly, Anne, and in yours, friend, that's what is the stopgap that helps you to move towards a better system, people who are sort of doing it. And fabulous to hear that you've got a trainee there or a nurse that you're working with who's also got that interest that you've helped to stoke. Because if people don't, ultimately, it's all about people. Systems are just the ideas of people, aren't they? They're only changed by people. So people are what drives it, Anne.
Absolutely. I just want to say that the wound world is wider than you ever think either, you know. So in the hospital system, in that particular case, I built a very strong relationship with the pathologist and the pharmacists and all of those people that I now drag into our vascular team, which is becoming quite something. So, you know, we're going to need more space, wider corridors in the hospital for us to traverse down. But we have grabbed those people in, and they now have a passion as well.
And I think when you
let's talk to each other.
Yeah. And when you demonstrate what you actually do, I think people, when they see you in action, go, oh, she's not just a nurse, that Anne, is she? She's not just someone who tucks people into bed and takes blood pressure, you know. And I think that that's what you've got to do. You've got to kind of show by your performance in front of your colleagues. And then I think people realise that there is actually a very high level of specialty in wound care. And I think once people have got that, they understand that, you know, there is an aspiration that they ought to have to get to this place.
Yeah, bit of respect. I'm going to start calling Anne the Pied Piper, I think. She's bringing people.
I'm going to call her the Rabbit Leprechaun because that was the best line I've ever heard.
Fantastic stuff. Fran, what have we missed with Anne? I know we've missed plenty, but...
Oh, I could talk to Anne for hours.
So could I. I'm loving chatting with Anne. But have we missed anything specifically with this topic that we...
No, I mean, I think we've highlighted this problem that we're all working in silos. We've highlighted the problem that sometimes there are patchy and deficiencies in education, and that there are ways that we can address this through formalised education programmes or from even these workshops that Anne runs that help us to be able to work more collaboratively. So I think it's always good when you present a problem to present some solutions, and I feel we've done that.
Yeah. Indeed. And Anne, from your perspective, I'm sure there's a million things, but is there anything obvious that we've missed that you particularly wanted to say, given that we've got the platform today?
I don't think we've got the time, Rod, but thank you for that. I'm told I take after James Joyce, and I thought, well, he did all right eventually.
Right, that's right.
So, I'll just keep going.
Anne might get a return visit on the podcast at some point, I suspect, Fran. In the future. But for the moment, Anne, we must say just thank you for taking the time, and really, really appreciate it. Oh, have you lost you've lost sound. Well, we best say goodbye to Anne, and we'll give her a phone call and let her know that we've said goodbye. But I thank you for your time as well, Fran. It's been fabulous to catch up today, as always.
Thanks very much, Rod.
And that's it. Until next time, here on The Wound Doctors.